KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, a three-day event from September 11th through 13th. The keynote speaker for this 20th anniversary celebration will be Mr. Les Pee Wee Harrison. And other speakers include Imani Muhammad, Mike Crenshaw, Jamo Greenidge, and more. That's Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, September 11th through 13th, at venues across Portland. Location, speakers, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rank in Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Well, good morning. It's a beautiful day for fighting the empire, and I think we're going to start out. We're going to talk about this. It's been so much in the news, and it's not going to go away. It's this migration crisis in Europe. I think it was yesterday, a sad spectacle. A body of a little 2-year-old boy was washed up on a beach somewhere in the Mediterranean. He's a Syrian kid who's and this put it went all around the internet and everything, and it's put more pressure on in the UK on David Cameron, because they have been avoiding taking in refugees, and right now, they've been piling up in this train station in Budapest and not being allowed to travel any further. And so it's really a chaotic situation. And it's sort of a lot of people think it's the end of the European Eurozone's open borders policy, where you can travel from one country in Europe to another just the way we travel from Oregon to Washington. It's that easy. But when you have all these refugees from these wars, it's the system is really falling apart. One observer said, and it's Raoul Ilargi-Meyer, who writes for the Automatic Earth website, in his estimation, the death toll of all these this migration is causing, you know, drownings at sea and everything else, death toll is approaching 20,000 people. Well, last month, it was a very interesting article in the UK Guardian by Seamus Milne, and he was writing then about David Cameron and his Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond, who were kind of in a dudgeon then, because they... At that time, a lot of these migrants were piling up in France at the Port of Calais, where the Channel Tunnel, one end of the Channel Tunnel, and they were trying to hop aboard trucks and trains to get to England. And this got Cameron and Hammond kind of in a snit. They didn't want to take in all these people. And the... apparently the most of these migrants, they prefer to go to Germany or Sweden, where the benefits are higher. They get some kind of get their needs taken care of. One thing to remember is that that migrants, people fleeing war or persecution, have a human right to be accepted, as to be given asylum and to be supported, either have work or else have some kind of, being fed and clothed and sheltered. This is a human right. This is not just charity on the part of the richer nations of the world. And so England's quota for these migrants is very low, and I think Cameron and his people want to keep it that way. The real crisis is in the Mediterranean. So here we have in Greece and Italy this year, there have been something like 180,000 migrants. Now, these are two of the poorest countries, especially Greece. They've been having their problems with the euro banks and austerity. And that, at the same time, they have all these migrants coming in by the sea and also from Turkey. It's very easy to get in a little boat and go to some of the Greek islands, and then from there get into Europe. Well, it's easy to do it in one way, but not in others, because those little boats get crowded, they sink, and this is apparently what happened to that little Syrian boy. But when you look at where these, there are also a million more refugees in Turkey and Lebanon and Pakistan and Jordan. These are other countries that are really not, except for Turkey, are not in much position to take care of all these migrants. They are poor countries themselves. And it turns out that the migrants that do get to the UK get exploited on farms, and they get shorted on their pay, and they get... when you look at where these refugees come from, they come from... war-torn countries, Syria, Pakistan, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and Somalia. And so these are some of the countries that were, if you remember, several years ago, retired General Wesley Clark, this happened right after 9/11 in 2001, Clark was at the Pentagon. He was talking with people there, and somebody told him that there was a list of countries to go to war with. And those countries were Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And those are some of the countries that are where these refugees are coming from. So the wars that we are inflicting on these countries are the cause of this crisis right now. We might take a little quick look at Syria. The war started there about 3 or 4 years ago. The U.S. has passed up a few opportunities to try and reach a settlement. The U.S. is kind of it doesn't really know who to support. You know, for a while there was this talk of some kind of a free Syrian army. These were sort of secular, democratic-minded people, and they have quickly faded away. And the main opposition to the regime of Bashar Assad is the jihadis, al-Nusra, and the Islamic State, and the Kurds. We'll get to that a little bit later. But it's interesting that our war with Syria did not begin just recently. It actually began back in 1949 when we overthrew a general who was ruling. He was ruling Syria. His name was Shukri al-Kuwaiti, and we didn't like him. And so we the CIA mounted a little coup, and al-Kuwaiti was replaced by a kind of a crooked military officer named Husni al-Zaim, Well, he didn't last very long, and he was replaced. Later on, al-Kuwaiti was elected back in office, and then there was another plot against him that included assassinations and things. And so this started in 1949, and these attempted coups, led to a kind of a series of government takeovers, and finally Hafez al-Assad stepped in and just kind of, in his brutish way, restored kind of continuity to Syria that lasted for 30 years until he died, and then his son Bashar took over. So our involvement in Syria goes back quite a ways. And the thing to keep in mind is that this is blowback is what it is. Well, in his the countries that have provided these migrants, and we might ask who is coming next. Well, there's a war going on in Yemen, and people are fleeing there. Some are fleeing to the Gulf states. Some are fleeing into Saudi Arabia. They may be trying to get into Europe. They may be next wave of suffering migrants. Also, we've been inflicting a war on Ukraine, a civil war there. And we don't hear about it very much in our media, but something like 1 million Ukrainians have fled that war, and they are going actually to Russia. And Russia has been taking care of these people. Well, we've seen the wars. One thing that in Seamus Milne's article, he talks about Africa, where there's been lots of corporate plunder and climate change. And he, in his article, you can find it in the UK Guardian, I think, from March, from August 14th, and he provides a link to a report that just came out, and this is really very eye-opening. This is a report on how Africa, we think of Africa as being the recipient of all kinds of aid from the West, and this is not really true. What's happening is that, yes, aid is going in, and loans are going in, but more money is coming out of Africa than goes into Africa. And what's coming in is $134 billion of aid, and money is coming into Africa, but leaving Africa is $192 billion. So that means there is a net loss of $58 billion a year. And we don't know. This is something I've heard about for quite a while, but this is the first time I've seen this report. It just came out. It was a commission by some groups, the Jubilee Debt Campaign, the Health Poverty Action, and a bunch of other organizations. And the research is done by Curtis Research. And their main conclusion is that we take more than we give. And this is a quote, that Africa is aiding the rest of the world. And how do they do this? How is this? They break it down into detail. Got the little list right here. It's a 40-page report, so you can get it on the you can look it up on the internet. It's called, the report is called Honest Accounts ? The True Story of Africa's Billion-Dollar Losses. So once again, just do a web search on Honest Accounts ? And you will get this report. And these are the things. This is the inflows to Africa. And so there's the official aid and there's the unofficial aid. There are private grants, loans to governments, loans to the private sector, and so forth, and they total $133.7 billion. And what is coming out of Africa are things like debt payments, $21 billion, increase in international reserve holdings, multinational corporate company profits. There are also illicit financial outflows, remittances, and then the brain drain. This is an interesting one that's been going on for a long time. In some of these poor countries in Africa, they spend money on their training doctors and people, and then what happens when these people are trained, they go off to Europe or the United States for more lucrative jobs, and so these African countries pay for their training, but then they lose their services. So this is a net loss. Also, illegal logging, illegal fishing. I remember a few years ago, there was a lot of uproar over these supposed pirates operating off of Somalia that, they were boarding oil tankers and holding them for ransom and stuff. They started out as fishermen who were trying to stop European poachers from taking over their fishing grounds. And so these are some of the outflows from Africa. One thing I try to find out is whether the whether things like coltan were included in this outflow of wealth. Eastern Congo is very rich in a lot of minerals. In fact, that was the reason for the civil war in Congo way back in the 60s when President Lumumba was assassinated. It had to do with the copper mines in eastern southern Congo. And so there is a mineral called coltan, which is actually a sort of a two-mineral combination, and it's very necessary for lots of electronic gear. Without it, we wouldn't have our smartphones and TV and all that. And this comes from eastern Congo. It is kind of taken out of the country and sold very cheap to guess where? The United States and Europe and other wealthy countries. And whether this is included in the report that I just mentioned, I am not sure, but it is certainly a net loss to Africa. The U.S. is, there's been the prime mover in these wars that we talked about, Syria, Iraq, Libya, although, Europe went along with these wars. NATO provided troops in Afghanistan. France was a prime mover in the overthrow of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya. And as much as you may dislike that dictator, he kept a stable government more or less, and he actually is willing to deal with the West. And, he was overthrown and killed. And what's happening in Libya now is a total disaster. There are, two rival governments and all these fanatic militias operating. It's also where a lot of the boat people originated. They were, they came from countries in Africa, and they were put on boats in Libya and went up to Italy. And so this is Europe was a willing accomplice in these wars. Well, the U.S. has not suffered any of the crises that Europe is suffering from, but the U.S. has its own immigration, its migrant problem. The so-called, the undocumented people coming to this country. And where do they come from? The figures that I found was that 58% come from Mexico, 23% from the rest of Latin America, 11% from Asia. Well, that adds up to about 90-something percent. And so others come from Canada and Europe and whatever. Well, it's very interesting that why are they fleeing their countries of origin? A lot of it has to do with the wars that we inflicted on Central America. If you add the migrants coming from Mexico and Guatemala and El Salvador add up to 70% of the total. Well, Mexico has had a problem with the United States for a long, long time. There's that famous quote from the dictator Porfirio Diaz that poor Mexico, so far from God and so close to the United States. Well, we have inflicted, regime changes on Mexico. We have exploited their oil and their minerals. We have sort of abetted this I call it narco-fascism, because these drug gangs, you could really consider them to be like little fascist enterprises, death squads, as it were. And they are supported by all the drugs that we buy in this country, plus the banks that launder the money. Some of our big banks have been involved in laundering drug money from Mexico. And of course, once that money is laundered, these drug barons can invest it in all sorts of supposedly legitimate business. So another thing that has made Mexicans suffer is NAFTA, the so-called free trade agreement. Well, it has been responsible for these maquiladora factories along the border. It's also involved in undercutting small farmers in Mexico. The subsidized corn from this country comes into Mexico, and the local corn growers cannot sell their corn, and so they lose their land, they lose their livelihood, and a lot of them come to this country, just to support their families. This is not something that people do just for the heck of it. It takes a lot of it's a wrenching experience to leave your home, leave your family, cross a dangerous border, come into a kind of a hostile environment, working on these agribusiness farms, under exploitive conditions. This is not a thing that people willingly do unless they are forced into it. And we have a false. Let's take a call. Sean is on the air. Okay, Sean, what's up?
Well, good morning, Per. I won't take up much of your time. It's just you just mentioning, what we've been doing in Latin America is just a reiteration of, what's been going on there with the U.S. government over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to quote Eduardo Galeano.
Oh, he's always good. Yes. Uh-huh.
His great book, which literally, and let's say neoliberally, he describes this very thing that you're talking about, which is now going on in Africa, and that there is much more an outflow of money than the money that's coming into Africa, which is the same thing that the U.S. and the British were doing in Latin America and elsewhere over the last century. And, his great quote is simply, development is a consequence of undevelopment elsewhere. Because of those very circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing in Africa is what they've been doing the last century when they've gone in and basically taken over countries for resources and politics and so forth. So
anyway,
so I'd like to recommend anybody, because most people really have not heard about it, but it's such a fantastic book. And again, it's Open Veins of Latin America.
Oh, that's a great book. Yes.
Yeah. Eduardo Galeano.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Highly recommend. I've read some of his stuff. He's an entertaining writer, too. I mean, it's hard to imagine something being entertaining writing about these horrible things, but he's a good writer, and he's really worth reading.
He is. He's so articulate. He's so bright, and he's just done his research. All of the things that he's written, but that definitely is, a great book. And, of course, that was written back in 1973, literally at the time that Pinochet took over in Chile, which was ironic because, of course, he was talking about that included of what's happened there. So anyway, but the relationship to what's going on in Africa is exactly what he wrote about.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but thanks for bringing this up, because it is huge. And like you said, this is not all this outflow of people is not just some coincidence. It has to do with the very same factors.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your comment. Okay,
yep.
And then
thank
once
you.
Again, Eduardo Galeano, read any of his books. And also, let me say once again, if you want to get this report, It's called Honest Accounts with a question mark, The True Story of Africa's Billion-Dollar Losses. It's a 40-page report, so you can go on the internet and you can download it, print it off, and you have your own very own copy. And it's very very interesting reading. It's not difficult reading. It's very clear and concise. So anyway, that is we got another call. James on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. So there's a couple great memes circling around the internet, and it's like one of them is like having trouble with immigrants, and it shows a picture of a Native American. It's like, yeah, that must be tough.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, mm-hmm. And there's another one that talks about when Europe didn't send their best, showed the picture of the same Native American. They said sent all their killers, rapists, and people with diseases. And it just kind of speaks to the fact that we're denouncing essentially in the Hispanic people who come over what the Europeans, they're for the same things that the Europeans did. I'm not trying to say that, Mexicans are trying to come and take over because I'm a Hispanic person, but it's the idea that, that we are here, that, my Spanish ancestors in Mexico are there, they were illegal. They didn't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
According to them, Mexicans don't belong here. And it's like, man, Mexicans own this.
Hey, we took about one third or almost half of the country away from them in the war back in 1845.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what really gets me is there's so many people who they're just like, well, you can't change it. That's different. Now you're just arguing. And it's like, no, it's not arguing. You can't sit there. You can't accuse people who are in a war-torn country and whose country has been torn up by policies that our government has imposed upon them. And then when they have no place else to go, they come here, and then you turn them away because for some reason you think that you're better than them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always good to know how this originated. Whether you can do anything about it or not, that's something else. I think there are things, this is not an internal predicament we're in, but it's always good to know how this originated and maybe think of ways that it can be undone. I think that eventually, as the cheap oil runs out, the farming is going to change an awful lot. We're going to be going back to a kind of agriculture we once had, maybe peasant agriculture. And
I would be fine with that. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of all this super huge development. We're expanding ourselves into oblivion.
Well, there are ways out. There are, there's a group called La Via Campesina, which is the peasant way, and they are highly organized, and they are. And there's also in Mexico the Zapatistas. We don't, they don't get in the news all the time. But they've been quietly building up their communities, and so they offer a way out of all this. There's a lot of hope. And thank you for your call.
Well, thank you for bringing it up, Hera. I appreciate it.
So we might just we have a few minutes left. So here we have. Migration has been caused by these wars that the West has inflicted on these countries, and you'd think that we would see the light, that we would stop doing this, but no, the Washington Warriors keep screwing up. They keep pushing for more and more war, and what can you expect from that, except more turmoil, more pain, more suffering. So thank you for listening. Stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
And thanks to Per Fogring for Fight the Empire this morning. It is a couple minutes before 10 o'clock. You are listening to Community Radio for Portland, KBOO Portland. Coming up in an hour, it's Between the Covers. Today, writer David Mitchell talks about his novel, The Bone Clocks. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk. Today, local author and activist Walida Imarisha discusses Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. But a reminder that Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we've got an hour-long Flashpoints coming up next on KABU. Hey, thanks, KABU members, for your generous support for community radio. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the other September 11th, film screening and discussion about the lasting impacts of the U.S.-funded military coup in Chile on September 11th, 1973. The event will take place on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in Portland. This film screening will include two 30-minute documentaries that focus on Mapuche land reclamation and language revitalization, as well as a discussion with the filmmaker about the specific laws that have been used to target the indigenous Mapuche people since the dictatorship began in 1973. Again, that's the other September 11th, on Friday, September 11th, at 7 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints, a special report on the current migrant crisis in Hungary. Crisis. Also, a preview of the 2015 Soil Not Oil International Conference that's about practicing sustainable agriculture to restore ecosystems and mitigate climate warming. And Harvey Wasserman on Obama's trip to Alaska and the possibility of renewables. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.